I want to welcome each of you. Today is Monday, October 3rd, 2022, and this is the Deeper Conversations coaching class. My name is Ann Kelly, and today we have Dania, Laura, Jean, Lisa, and Sterling. Very happy to have you back. We were all together last Monday for the first half of ethics, and today we're going to wrap that up, and you will have completed 3 hours of ethics-specific training. So let's start with our class agreements. Do we have a volunteer who would please read our class agreements for us?
I can do so.
Thank you, Sterling.
Class agreements. Number one, confidentiality. We agree to keep all information we hear within the classes or from our classmates confidential. This includes our live classes and listening to audios of the classes. Number two, positive focus. We agree to give positive feedback, to acknowledge versus criticize, to be accepting. Number three, hold the space. We agree to listen without interruption. Number four, presence. We agree to be fully present to the class without distraction or multitasking. Number five, beginner's mind. We agree to be curious and open, letting it all unfold. Number six, self-responsibility. We agree to practice excellent self-care. And number seven, the final one, coaching feedback. We agree that only positive acknowledgments are offered by the class participants after the coaching, focusing on the competencies observed and the strengths of the coach. The class facilitators may offer some mentoring feedback designed to further the learning of the coach and the class participants. Thank you.
Thank you, Sterling. That is my intention. I'd love to see or hear from you if you'll add your intention to mine, to be mindful of those agreements.
Yep.
Yeah, very good. Thank you. Thank you. I'd really like to start just checking in with you and seeing, as we usually do on Mondays, we reflect back on the previous topic. Now, today we're continuing the topic of ethics, but still, I'd like to check in with you anything. How was last Monday? What stuck with you? What are you curious to learn about today? If you did go to the ICF website and look up a few things, tell us what you found there or even what you hoped to find and didn't, because we'll go back there today. So we're just checking in. We're just checking in on how you are on the topic of ethics today. I'd love to hear a few words from each of you. Who'd like to go first?
I can go.
Thank you.
On last Wednesday, we were talking about reflecting on the Monday class, and it still has stuck with me over the past several days post that Wednesday check-in as well on the class for Monday. You know, what it was interesting for me, and where I'm really getting a sense of freedom that I didn't think about, is that this feels like, it's always felt like the things not to do. Don't do this, don't do this. That's how I always interpreted it. And I think that Laura and I had connected on that because we're both strong in HR. That's what we do regularly. And I'm just speaking for Laura, that's what she had shared. But what was interesting is that it shifted for me. It's a place of honor, it's a commitment that we can share with our clients that allows them to see that we're in this for the best experience they can offer, and then our role in making that happen for that individual. So the sense of commitment that came out of my reflection and still in my pondering since then, it's become even more important that this is truly something that doesn't keep us within the guardrails as much as it helps us to really set ourselves away from everybody else that just throws out a shingle and says, hey, I'm a coach. It was just where my mind went.
My mind is going That's just, I think if the ICF were listening to this and all of the people that worked very hard on the new code, I was not on that team that designed, rewrote the new code, but if they could hear what you just said, I think they would say mission accomplished.
Yeah.
That it's not retribution. It's a choice, and yes, yes, much more to come. Thank you, Sterling.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think I'll just build on that. I think the place where for me that I want to take that, and I shared the very first day that I'm not doing a ton of coaching right now, but where I envision this coming in for me is at the start of each session and just reminding individuals in some way, shape, or form about the ethics. And even if it's just a short statement. So one of the things that I think I envision myself doing is kind of figuring out what that looks like and sounds like for me. So as I'm kicking off each coaching session, I'm touching on it in some small way.
And Laura, that's such a doable thing that you've just described. Is that something you want to kind of carry through this 90 minutes and see if it comes to you by the end?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, certainly I have had the thought after digesting last week that this is where I think it would go. I have not kind of paused long enough to say, what does that sound like in action?
Very good. Well, please share with, I'd love to hear you share if it gets a little bit clearer, and others, if you're fine tuning that language, Laura may hear it from you. You may hear that language from Laura. Very good. I like the specificity of these. Lisa, Jean, and Dania, where are you with ethics?
This is Jean. Good morning.
Good morning.
I concur with what our colleagues have said on the call, that especially appreciate, Sterling, what you said is that a reframe around this is a supportive tool, not a dismissive tool. And just the simple distinction that they're no longer using coachee and mentee was really powerful for me, that we referred to our clients as clients. That was simple. It made me realize how important it is to continue to revisit ICF's documentation. Because I revere it, I should be more engaged with it. So that's really what I'm learning from this, is the power of the engagement.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Lots of good takeaways in this. Thank you, Jean. Lisa.
Hi. Yeah. I guess my thoughts aren't really clear this morning, but on this, still a lot of words for me. And but what I know is that, or what's coming clearer, is that there's nothing in the ICF competencies that a certified coach has not learned in some version or another. So for me, this increasingly seems to be a checklist. Am I evoking, you know, brilliance? Am I, you know, conveying trust and empathy? Am I? And that makes me feel very secure, because kind of it's the guardrails. And I can slip off the side of the road, but I won't go down the cliff as long as I'm maintaining sight on these as a reference point. So that's very securing. Yeah.
Lisa, thank you. The majority of coach educator gatherings that I attend, the ICF will repeat, it's there in the competencies, it's there in the markers, it's there in the code, like we're not tricking you, it's there. And you just shared that in some form, we learn that in our basic coach training, and that's a comfort. And I do bump up against the guardrails sometimes. That's why they're there. And yeah, we can correct that, get back to But I'm just thinking what a sense of relief that is for folks who hear that, that there's not, because we've all taken tests where we go, you didn't cover that. Why is this on the test? You didn't cover that. And maybe something, maybe I'm not an internal coach. I have no idea about internal coaching. And there is something about internal coaching. And then I may genuinely be puzzled. Then I'll look at the competencies for my answers. More to come about this, but I'm grateful for your noticing of the answers are there, refreshing awareness, and they can be the guardrails that keep us there, as opposed to falling off a cliff, as opposed to being, what was it, 32 people, 32 coaches that ultimately had the distinguishment of rising to that independent review board. Woo! That's the cliff. Okay. Thank you, Lisa. Dania, how about you?
I share what my colleagues said, and I can add that it's really important for me to think and refresh all these points of ethics, because I think that the client can be more secure in the session, and I think we can be more professional as a coach to explain and also to tell that we are working with this code of ethics.
Yes. Thank you, Dania. Thank you. Anything anybody'd like to add after hearing from the rest of the class? Okay, very good. All right, pop quiz. I don't know why I'm doing this. The three things I mentioned, Michael Marks shared last time, there were three things you wrote down, just for the heck of it, to be an ethical coach and stay out of trouble. Anybody remember? Laura?
I think the first one was respect.
Yes, respect.
Do what's best for the client.
Yep.
And you cannot communicate too much to the client.
Yeah, respect, do what's best for the client. And the third is you can't over communicate with your client. Now you can really, you don't call them at 3 a.m. But on ethics, I agree. We can't over communicate on the protections available to our clients and to us on the ethics. Very good. I have three more that I will share later on today. Any thoughts on that? On respect, do what's best for your client, and you can't communicate too much. Okay. Well, I thought I would, I was able, yay, I was able to get on the ICF website and change my password. But let me go ahead and show you some information there. Join the Zoom community. This is what I want. Okay, this is what I want. I mentioned last time that there is an ethics community of practice that meets quarterly. There's a water cooler of the ethics group that meets monthly. The community of practice meets quarterly. I want to show you this page just because it's phenomenal to me. So these are upcoming webinars. Okay, fine. Well, now let me go back and see everyone. Can everyone see the screen? Everyone see my screen? Okay, so these are upcoming. Okay, ethics of mentoring, working with a sponsor. All right, that's interesting. We talked about sponsor. Setting expectations, a presentation on coaching packages and refunds. I think they got the name and the topic there mixed. That one October 19th. That is going to be interesting. Coaching packages and refunds. And then walking the talk. In ethics. But this is what I really want to show you. So these are upcoming. These are ethics sessions that are available to you free because you're an ICF member. And boy, are there some interesting topics in here. I'm just going to go through real quick. So there's the packaging and refunds, working with a sponsor. Now, the ethics of mentor coaching. The value of being an ICF coach. What if somebody says to you, why are you an ICF coach? I want to see everybody. I can't see you all. Put you back on. The revision of the code of ethics. When does it apply? Here's one. Differentiation between coaching and therapy. This will come up today. This will come up in your coaching sessions if you coach for more than an hour. Very important topic. And here's an entire community of practice dedicated to that topic. These are communities of practice. You can go back in and listen to these and earn continuing education units right here because you're an ICF member. Stump the experts. Let me go to page 2. The interpretive statements, if you want to learn more about those, and the independent review board, the IRB, if you're interested in that, ethical considerations for assessors. These are people who listen to performance evaluation recordings. Data protection. We talked about that. That is an up and coming, more important area for ethics. And the GDPR, I think, there it is, General Data Protection Regulation in the European Union. Coaching virtually. Maybe we started out in person or by phone. Most of us are coaching virtually now. Many of us are coaching virtually. What are the ethical considerations of that? What are the ethical considerations? The ethics course in multiple languages. Embedding diversity, part of ethics. And let me show the last couple. Using direct communication without being directive. How do I do that with a client? I want to be clear and concise, but I don't want to tell them what to do. How might I use direct communication without being directive and stepping outside the role of coach? And exploring the convergence of ethics and core competencies. Again, these are available to you as ICF members to enhance your ethics learning. So let me tell you this, and I'm going to tell you I'm 99% sure, not 100, but 99. You could take these ethics courses. At the end of today, you will have completed the 3 required hours of ethics training. Every 3 years, 3 hours required every 3 years. You can go in and take these and earn more continuing education hours. And it's fine that they're in ethics. You've satisfied the original 3 hours. And yes, you can go in and earn another 3 or another 6 or another 2 by listening to community of practice. They don't stop you at 3 and say you can only learn 3 hours of ethics. So any questions on, yes, Jean, you have a question.
Do we have to attend live or can we sign up and listen to it?
I believe that the items we saw at the bottom here are recordings. Some of them haven't happened yet. These are coming up. But once you start getting down there, these are recordings. So you can go in and listen to these recordings. And also, if you add it to the ICF's learning management system, it will keep track of that for you. And when it comes time to certify, it'll say complete. Now, I'll tell you one thing that freaks me out. still after years, I'll go in and I'll add a course to my learning portal, I think is what they call it. And then I click on the course to complete it and it says incomplete. And I always go, what? And I go, oh, okay, it's all right. I haven't started yet. But if you add something to your learning portal and then go into it when you intend to complete it, you see that big, I think it's red, incomplete. It just means you haven't started or finished the course yet. So you go ahead and take that online, Jean.
Sorry.
No, yeah.
I maybe others are familiar with this, but I don't know about the learning portal or that it tracks our data. So I'd be really curious to see that through your eyes.
I will do that at 1:30 my time in an hour and 7 minutes.
Just okay.
Since I don't have it set up and it may take me a minute to find it, but if you're familiar with learning management systems, it's the ICF's learning management system.
Thank you, that'd be really helpful.
Yeah, and it was new. I'm guessing it really started up 2 or 3 or 4 years ago. And that's when I started becoming familiar. And it's so nice to go in there and go, oh, look, it has that course I did last year. Oh, look, it has that community of practice I attended. It's already entered in there. So that's really nice for us. That's a nice thing to have. Another nice one, in case I don't mention it, is, I think I'll stop share here just for a second so we get something different. Another nice one is, I will remember this. Oh, the new coaching agreements. We might have mentioned this last Monday, I don't recall. But again, part of your ICF membership, there are a couple of coaching agreement templates on the ICF website. Next Monday, you're going to talk about establish and maintain agreements. So there's the agreement in the coaching session. And there's the agreement you have with your client that covers the entire relationship. So that will be your topic next Monday. You may want to go on the ICF website, just familiarize yourself with that portal and find those coaching agreements. If anybody wants to stick around, I'll find them as well afterwards. But because next week leads right into coaching agreements, it's a great time to do any adjustments you have there with the ethics, and also to find that language on the ICF website. If you haven't looked at them in a couple of years, do go and look, because I would look every year or so and kind of go, I mean, they were one page and like half a page or three quarters of a page. And I was like, what? And now they're much meatier. There's a lot more to those agreements. So if you have not looked at the sample coaching agreement, just type that in the search bar on the ICF, sample coaching agreements, and it will bring that up. That sets you, so we've covered trust 2 weeks ago, ethics last week and this week, and next week coaching agreements. So it's a nice design that Jamie and Sherry have here to set us all up for next week when Julie will be with you on Monday and talk about those coaching agreements. Any questions? No? Okay. Well, let me go back. I'd like to show you a little bit more on the ICF webpage. And forgive me while I figure out where, here we are. This, what is that? Oh, that's coming up. Woo! Oh no. Now see, now I'm stuck. Ah, I do this and I have no idea where my page is gone. Ah. Let me see if I can redo that. Okay. This is so sorry about that. All right. now I'm I just need to get back to you all and see Zoom. And I know it's there. Yay! I lost you. Okay. So go here. I am not the smoothest at this. Okay, we talked about this. This report, which we saw last time, came from the ICF webpage, and this is what I wanted to show you. Okay, this is what I call the three boxes page. So you've logged into the ICF, you've typed in ethics, and it brings you to this page. So everything we're going to look at comes from, in this blue box here that's hard to see, it says ethics. So this is what we get when we search for ethics on the website. I'm going to spend, again, we did last time, but some time right here in the ethics resources, because we did not get to everything. I very briefly mentioned I had experience calling the ICF ethics hotline. So I at least want to just show you that phone number. And it's the same phone number for the ICF. So what they do, they don't actually have individuals who monitor a separate phone line 24 hours a day for ethics assists. They have the primary phone number there and the primary email address for ethics inquiries. And when you call the ICF, this is what they ask you to do. Let them know I have an ethical inquiry. You don't have to tell them anything other than that. Just say, I have an ethical inquiry. I'd like to be connected with someone. And they know to connect you with the individuals on the ICF staff who are the ethics experts. Then you may get a phone call back, you might be transferred and speak to that person, or you may exchange an email. But your first step would be either to email or phone or both the ICF and just say, I have an inquiry that relates to the code of ethics, and I'm an ICF member. So please put me in touch with someone. Liability, these are available for you to go through. The frequently asked questions I love. I'm going to show these. Let me pick one of the topics we didn't get to last week as much. Maybe I'll do 7. Record keeping was one that was mentioned, but I don't know that we spent a lot of time on that. So what I've gone now is I'm looking at frequently asked questions about ethical standard number 7. The format of this looks a lot like the interpretive statements. These are frequently asked questions. I mentioned that just in case you're looking for this and you go, that's not what it looked like. You may be in the interpretive statements, you may be in the frequently asked questions. So if you have specific record-keeping questions, this is a great place to go. Here's one. Do I have to provide client records in case of subpoena or ethical complaint? The answer is this will vary by country and jurisdiction, but generally, yes. Consider carefully what you put in your records. Is that valuable information to you as an ethical ICF professional? So if you even have an inkling, what we're looking at now are resources where you can go and get some specific, subject-specific information through the interpretive statements, through the frequently asked questions, through communities of practice that have taken place on that topic. Somebody asked this, how long do I have to keep client records? Yeah, Jean, here, there is no ICF guideline at this time. You should check your local and national laws and regulations for compliance guidelines. If you are audited for income tax, be sure to protect confidentiality. That's interesting. I don't know that I've ever seen that. If you're audited, be sure to protect the confidentiality of your clients in what you turn over to any agency. How should I dispose of records? To the best of your ability, you should delete all online and electronic records as well as shred paper records. So that's an example of, I might have a specific question. I want to know about record keeping. What's up with that? What do I need to know? I could go here and I could go to the interpretive statements and I would have more information on that topic. And I can do that all the way through the standards for those that are of most interest. Call out another one. What is another standard that you were interested in? And we'll look at that one. It's a race. Well, I tell you what, both numbers 10 and 11 were mentioned. We captured at the beginning last week, 1, 5, 6, 7, 10, and 11 were primary interests. Let's take a look at 10. Sensitive to having multiple contracts. Ah, there are no FAQs. Okay, so right now they don't have any. These are updated. So if I got this message, where might I go to learn more about having multiple contracts? They don't have any FAQs right now. Where could I go to learn about this particular topic?
Are you asking us?
Yeah.
In the interpretive statements, maybe?
Yeah. What, one other place? Where else could I go?
Could this possibly be another hotline question?
Sure, of course, because then I get to do what I love to do. This and this, and she's my sister, and that's her brother, and I'm blah, 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 and I tell them everything. Yeah, absolutely. So the interpretive statements, I can call the ethics hotline. There are videos we haven't even gotten to yet that we can watch. And the community of practice. I could go to the water cooler, not recorded, meets monthly, the ethics water cooler, and I could ask this question. I could ask that question and get some real-time answers. Let's take a look at number 11, no FAQs. I am aware of, now this, I'm glad this is here because this relates to the mentor-mentee language. Standard 11, I am aware of and actively manage any power or status difference between the client and me that may be caused by cultural, relational, psychological, or contextual issues. I am aware of and actively manage, aware and actively manage. I'm on the lookout. You are on the lookout now too, because you've mentioned this. Hey, you talked about this last time, this power and status. Yep. Let me go back to number 6, since that was mentioned as well, and then we'll move on. Number 6, conflicts of interest always shows up in that pie chart. Always shows up, conflicts of interest. As an internal coach, I manage conflicts of interest or potential conflicts with my coaching clients and sponsors through coaching agreement and ongoing dialogue. So let's pause there for a minute. We got a signed coaching agreement. I wrote it all up. I took ethics training. I put everything in there. You read it, you signed it. Why do I have to have this ongoing dialogue with my client? What do you think?
Well, because relationships aren't static. What might be true today could be completely different next week. That's my first thought.
Yeah. Yeah. They absolutely are not static. The relationship I have with my client at the first session is different than the final session, maybe 12 or 15 hours later. Different relationship. Revisit that topic of ethics. Revisit that. It could be something as simple as I invite clients to send me assessments they believe captured who they are. Don't send me an assessment just to send me an assessment. But if you really like that assessment, you really feel like it captured you, absolutely. And you want to send it, sure. That would be a good time to remind a client. And when you send it, I will store it on my desktop computer, which has the latest virus software, which is checked. I have IT staff. When you and I complete coaching, I will delete that. You explain your process. And they may, yeah, I got it. But inside they're going, this person's on top of things. This person cares about my privacy. That document I sent, I might be willing to send something else to you because of the care that you indicate you're taking with what I've already shared with you. Just a little drop-in, a little ethics drop-in. Of course, this will be kept confidential. Of course, this will be deleted when you and I complete coaching. Okay. Let me go back. So again, now I'm on my ethics resources was one of those three boxes. I got to my three box page. So the FAQs, there is a 3-hour course available that was updated in 2021 to reflect the new code. That's available. The community of practice we saw earlier, the ethics water cooler meets monthly. Chapter leaders and the interpretive statements. Let's go here and see if we can find one of our poor missing, let's try 10 and 11 again. Responsibility to client. Yeah. Yes. Yes. This is ethical standard number 10. I'm sensitive to the implications of having multiple contracts and relationships with the same client and sponsor at the same time in order to avoid conflict of interest situations. Again, conflict of interest. I've been looking at the ethical reports now for 5 or 6 years, always on the pie chart. Always in the pie chart. Conflict of interest. Where is your allegiance? Is it to me, your client? Is it to the sponsor? Is it to the prime who pays you? Where is your allegiance as my coach? Good information here. If you want to get clearer about having multiple contracts with clients. So I'm glad that there's the info in the interpretive statements, and I'm going to make the assumption that the FAQs will catch up with that. I'm going to read.
Is that a question, Anne, if you don't mind?
Yeah, please.
I'm going back to the three. I guess my brain is always trying to bring this, to minimize it or boil it all down, I guess. And so going back to the three comments that, or the three descriptors that your colleague had said, the respect, the do what's best for the client, you can never communicate too much. Under that, I'm not sure where the word came, but I wrote in big caps, transparency. Is that a key go-to, again, at the risk of oversimplifying, for at least this particular ethic, especially perhaps that letting people know who's being coached, what the intentions are, the boundaries of each relationship? Is transparency kind of a key pillar for the ethics, would you say? As much as respect, as much as the three?
I have an answer that I can't wait to give, but I would like to hear from a couple of other people. What is your answer to Lisa's question? Is transparency integral to being an ethical coach? Is that your question, Lisa?
Thank you. That's a good framing.
Thoughts, Jean?
Yeah, I think that's that is interpretive, transparency. And for me, kind of the guide that I have is this going to help the client or hinder the client? This because transparency is boundless. And so is the information I'm giving for the good and the benefit of the client, or is it for the good or the benefit of me? Who am I serving? And so I'm very curious to hear what you have to say, Anne, about, you know, because I coach multiple people within the same organization and a few within the same division, and they're at the same level, so they're peers. And I'm very curious to hear your thoughts on, do we need to let them know that we're coaching other peers? I would lean on no. Not like I'm withholding that information, because that's not the focus. The focus is on them. The focus isn't on who I'm coaching. So those are my thoughts.
I love that, Jean. You added another layer, because there's transparency. Here's what I do with your information. Here's what I do with what I know, with any notes. But you just added another layer. Is part of transparency telling client A that I coach their boss?
It is fascinating, because then you've got transparency in one hand and confidentiality on the other.
Yeah. Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah.
This is a good spot. Poor Laura. Laura always agrees to be my break buddy, and I swear to you, this is the first two times in my life I've remembered a break. I can't believe we've been talking 45 minutes. It's like gone that fast. Let's take a 5-minute break, and as part of that, as you're pouring a little bit of coffee, consider this junction of transparency and confidentiality. Transparency and confidentiality. We're going to stay mostly with transparency, but how does that inform and relate to doing the best for my client and their confidentiality? So we'll meet back here in 5 minutes. Welcome back. Oh, you know what I didn't do? I didn't get volunteers for Wednesday. Ooh. Wednesday will be the 5th. Okay, I neglected to ask for volunteers for Wednesday, and I'll be with you on Wednesday for the live coaching. If you're not going to be here Wednesday, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. But if you are going to be here Wednesday and would like to volunteer, this is when you raise your hand. Thank you, Laura. Do you have a preference, Laura, for coach or client?
No, not a strong preference.
Okay, great. Who would like to participate in the practicum on Wednesday with Laura? You can be coach or client.
I could be client if that's okay with Laura.
Does that sound good?
Yep, that works.
Okay, so we have Lisa as client. Thank you very much, Lisa. And we have Laura as our coach. That's October 5th. And by the way, if you're on to, you know, be a coach or client on a Wednesday, can't make it for any reason, all good things are at the end of your two-hour reminder. Seriously, reply to the two-hour reminder whenever. Maybe it's Sunday afternoon and your plans have changed or you're not feeling well. Reply to the two-hour reminder. It'll go to info@deeperconversationscoaching.com and Jamie and Sherry will get that and they will know that you just say, I volunteered to do the practicum on Wednesday and I can't make it. So they know who will be doing that and they will get the word out to Julie or to me. And if you have any question, I don't remember how many hours I signed up. I would like to sign up for a few more hours or this or that, or can I, you know, the two-hour reminder is your best friend. So I'd like to take another look at the report, just to go back to that and see. Now, this is the 2020. We looked at this last Monday, but I think now in light of having looked through some of the standards, you, I hope, have a little bit better idea of how these pieces of the pie came to be and what they include. And again, I've mentioned that confidentiality has kind of exploded, appropriate boundaries has kind of exploded in size. I mean, that's almost 3/4 of the complaints, confidentiality and not maintaining appropriate boundaries. Any thoughts or questions there? Yeah, Jean.
Not maintaining appropriate boundaries is pretty broad. What is your interpretation of that?
That we can go to the actual ethical code. Certainly one of them, and it's too bad they have to write it, but one of these says, in essence, don't sleep with your clients. It does. I don't know which one it is, but it says that. And I think when I've seen it, they go, it's too bad we have to write this, but we do. So that's certainly not appropriate. And thank you for asking that, Jean, because we were just looking at an interpretive statement that talked about having multiple relationships. What if I'm a parent? What if I'm a former boss? And again, power. Is there power in my position as coach? And am I sensitive to how that affects my client? It could be as simple as I tell my client, we should meet every month, or every week. You should do an hour of coaching with me every week and they go, whoa, you used to be my boss, I guess I have to. The transparency earlier, I don't know if they're feeling that. They may be feeling, I have to do this because I had a relationship in which you were in charge. It may be best in some cases, not all, to say, I'm going to make a referral to someone else because you and I have a business relationship. We have a familial relationship, and I'd like you to have a coach that is unencumbered by those. That off the top of my head, that's language I might use. So appropriate boundaries, absolutely. Our clients should never feel at physical risk to themselves, their safety. But also, is my coach hold me as the highest priority, or are they beholding to a sponsor or prime or someone else because of those multiple relationships? I don't think I answered that, Jean. I think I expanded it. What do you think?
I'm curious. I think you did expand it. Thank you. And which particular ethic does that apply to, or is it general?
Oh, I'm sure there are multiple ones.
Okay.
I'm not going to stop and go through right now. If someone else finds that one, it's got to be the relationship with responsibility to client. Well, number 10, someone's already mentioned, am sensitive to the implications of having multiple contracts and relationships with the same client and sponsor at the same time in order to avoid conflict of interest situations. So it could be a conflict of interest, and I am no longer maintaining appropriate boundaries because if I can convince you to coach with me for five more hours, I'm going to hit the mark I want to hit with the prime. So I've got more than one master there that I'm serving. I am not doing what's best for my client. I may be trying to do what's best for me as coach. It's just one scenario. I have spoken to coaches, to an MCC in particular, and I said I had zero luck coaching a relative of mine. They forgot the first appointment and slept through the second, so we never got going. And that can be a familial, you know, oh, it's Aunt Annie. I can talk to her anytime, you know? So I made a referral because I thought this is not working. I asked that of an MCC, and the MCC said, I do coach some family members. I will do that with agreements in place as to what will happen. And it's up to the individual too. So that's one example. The fact that it did not work for me and I'm not really interested in coaching family is a personal choice I have made, not a professional one. It's a personal choice. There are other ICF professionals who can coach family members. So it's individual again. They've got to make sure they maintain boundaries. I can't be your aunt while I'm coaching you. I'm your coach. And I've got to hold your good at the highest in what we will achieve, not my priorities. Can I do that with a family member? Can I do that with lots to think about? What we can do. Any other questions on this pie chart? This comes out each year. And again, the number of complaints, very small. I didn't mention this last time. One of the reasons they receive more complaints, 32 were filed. Some were coach training programs. Some people were not ICF members. If someone complains about a coach who is not an ICF member, there's nothing the ICF can do. Mm. They don't handle the request. They're not going to handle that. They only handle ICF members. So you may see a higher number of complaints, but if somebody's complaining about a non-ICF coach, nothing the ICF is going to do. Why would they? Why would they do that? So the odds of having a complaint filed against you, minimal, very small. And Sterling, you mentioned this. The goal of the ICF is to educate, to educate. You'd have to really do some knucklehead stuff to lose your membership from the little I've seen in the ICF. They want to educate and help you be a better coach, be a better ICF professional. What I'd like to do next is put some of these into practice, and this gives you an opportunity to go through that code of ethics and look for specific standards, because we're going to do some scenarios now, because it's been kind of theoretical. Let's look at some scenarios and see what you might do in that instance. Here is our first one. Can everyone see that? And I'm sorry, it's a little funny page, but can everyone see and read that? Okay. Yeah, I'll read it because I know it's kind of small. I apologize, the magnification was either 200 or 400, nothing in between. So here's your scenario. You are an ethical ICF professional. You are working with a potential client and find out they are part of the LGBTQ community when you see them at a pride parade with their partner. You, the coach, have fundamental religious principles you follow, and this violates them. It gives you some actual codes to look at there. But before we do that, a little bit about this scenario. You may look at this scenario and go, honey, I'm leading the parade. I have no problem with this. So here's what I would ask you to do. Change this scenario until it gets under your skin. Maybe you see them at a rally for a cause that you do not support. So change it in your mind. Some of us are going to go, come on. Change it until it is a little uncomfortable for you. So do that right now. What might this client be doing? I've had individuals at their first session, their background, their virtual background sent a very strong message, a very strong, unmistakable message. So it may just be something that simple. Has everybody got something that would okay, if it's not the LGBTQ pride event, have you found something that would Now let's talk about the standards. And these are the questions I'm going to ask you. How will you determine whether you can effectively serve the client? Remember, always do what's best for the client. How will you determine whether you can effectively serve them? If you decide to coach them, how will you address this conflict? If you decide not to coach them, how will you handle it? Let's talk about this. Anything is open for discussion. I'll tell you that ACTOW is an organization I belong to, the Association for Coach Training Organizations, and they put this ethics presentation together. And like the ICF, because I'm a member, I get to use these slides. Now, an ethics drop-in. What do you think the odds are that even though I'm a dues-paying member of ACTOW, and they wrote and said it, this was out now, this ethics presentation. How many of you think I wrote to them anyway and said, do I have your permission to use your slides in classes that I teach? How many of you think I did that? Absolutely. How many of you think I still have that email? Absolutely. It's so easy. It's so easy. I got an email saying, oh yes, absolutely. It's included in your membership. Thank you. Keep those kinds of emails. Keep those kinds of emails. Okay. Thank you for letting me diverge. The floor is open. You refer to, did you have a chance to jot down? They're saying 8, 9, 11. 8, 9, 11, 17, and 25 are the standards. How would you answer these?
And are you able to slide down just as so we can see the numbers again?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, great.
Eight, nine, 11, 17, and 25. And listen, talk about brownie points. If you make up your own question, I love it. I love it. I don't know about those three questions you got there, Anne. I have my own question, so that's what I answered. That's the best.
So I'm just going to, this is Laura, I'm just going to start talking because I don't know that I have a definitive answer to this question. I mean, I feel like I've made it as relatable as I can for myself, and I keep coming back to two things. The first is how significant does this event impact my ability to serve them in an unbiased manner, right? Like, that's what I think about. Like, moving forward, am I able to take the client at face value? And if not, then I think there has to be sort of a path that deviates, at least from my perspective, down the road of, do I have a conversation with this individual to check out assumptions? And if I'm not willing to do that and it's still a barrier or a deal breaker, then I think, you know, based on the ethics as the coach, I have the ability to decide not to coach the person, and then I'd have to figure out how I wanted to handle that. So I think a lot of it comes down to how deep or how ingrained is this thing, and how much would it get in my way of being able to effectively serve the client? And I have to be really honest with myself about that.
I want to build on that, Laura. I heard this at a community of practice, I think in 2019. One of the speakers said this, and it was very powerful. They said, we start with our values. First, then the ICF values, the standards, the ethical standards, and then we make our decision. It starts with our values. And at first I was thinking, well, wait a minute, shouldn't it start with the rules? No, it starts with our personal values. That's how we make decisions in life. And then I run them through the filter of the standards, the ICF values, and then I make my decision. It starts with my values. To me, that was incredibly empowering. Incredibly empowering. And puts the onus right on me, because I'm making a value-driven decision, an Ann Kelly value-driven decision.
Yeah, I love that, and I absolutely love that. When you said, you know, when I saw the LGBTQ, I'm like, oh, that's no problem, and whatever, I'm pretty easygoing. And then when you forced me to think of an example, wow, there's, oh man, there's one that came up so vibrantly that are just completely contrary to my values, my sense of integrity, all that stuff. So thank you just for that experience, because that was very rich. And when you talk about values, that's so helpful, because one of the things that I was thinking, even in coaching someone who espouses those beliefs, if I could access, first of all, noticing my own, you know, bias. Do I feel like I could have these biases in check? Is it implorable, impossible? Then it's clear. If it's, yeah, I think I could, then would this person be open to discussing our difference in values? Not to get to the who's got the right position, but I often know that people who take extreme different positions than I often share values, which is a real head shaker. Yeah. So, you know, if we can have a conversation on that level, we share the same values, we just are pointing towards different solutions, then I feel that I could actually be kind of propelled towards that through my value of wanting to serve, through my curiosity. It could be extremely rich, but there would have to be that kind of respectful mutual recognition that, yeah, we're not, neither of us is evil. We share a lot of same values. We just act differently. So yeah, that was very rich, all of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. Yeah, this was a 180 shift for me, to go from I pay my dues to the ICF, tell me what to do, to I make valued and Kelly value-based decisions. Then I consult the standards. I'm still held to that pledge. If you all haven't reread the pledge at the end, the pledge that you sign, as an ICF professional in accordance with the standards of the Code of Ethics, I acknowledge and agree to fulfill my ethical and legal obligations to my coaching clients, sponsors, colleagues, and the public at large. If I breach any part of the ICF Code of Ethics, I agree that the ICF in its sole discretion may hold me accountable for so doing. I further agree that my accountability to the ICF for any breach may include sanctions such as mandatory additional coach training or other education or loss of my ICF membership and ICF credential. I say that every time I renew my credential. There's a little box in there somewhere. Do you agree to the Code of Ethics? And you go, yeah, sure. And I agree all of this to the ICF. I still get to make my own value-based decisions. Start with my own value-based decisions and run them through the core competencies and the Code of Ethics. If there's a bump in that road, I'm going to make use of the call to the ICF or the interpretive statements and work that out. My value may say one thing, the standards may say another. Then I got a real rich area to talk to them about. If they line up, great. Yes, Jean.
This is a really rich conversation. Thank you. I appreciate how you shifted it from this particular proposed scenario to one that would get under our skin. And to get under our skin for me is a values hit, you know, something that I would resist because it got in the way of my values. So I found that scenario and was really surprised by my reaction would be no. That's a no for me. Primarily, it's a no for me because it's a no that I can't be, it would be challenging for me to be neutral and unbiased in my conversation with you. So I'm imagining that I ran it through my values, I ran it through the experience that I cannot show up neutral anymore, and I chose to have the conversation about with the client This is a scenario, and the agreement was to find a new coach for them. I'm curious about your thoughts about the clean handoff, you know, to go to a new client, and how much integrity is needed to not, like, how would that happen, you know? And it would take a lot of thought about how to make sure the transfer over and here is a client and make sure you don't have this issue because this is the issue I had because this is where that client is at. You know, I'm not going to do that, but it's ran through my head. It was interesting to watch when I found my issue, how kind of triggered I got.
Yeah. So I want to acknowledge you for that, for really putting yourself in that, making it mm-hmm. real
mm-hmm.
and creating that. How would I react?
How would I do the handoff? If, you know, imagining that I went through all those steps, clean and appropriate and professional and upholding as best I could the standards, the handoff is curious to me.
I'll very briefly address that. To me, the handoff is guided by how long I'm in touch with this client. If they've just reached out to me and I go to their website and go, whoa, then I would, me and Kelly only, I would be comfortable saying, I'm not accepting new clients at this point. I can recommend some other coaches, or you can go on the ICF coach, select a coach. There are thousands of us on there because I have no relationship with that client. They've just contacted me, are you accepting new clients? And at that point, with minimal relationship, I would not seek to find another coach for them. I would just let them know that I'm not available. Let's say we've done three coaching sessions. Now it's very messy. Now we're engaged. We've been through the coaching agreement. We've done our, you know, foundation sessions. We're three sessions in, and I'm like, wow. Then we would have to have a conversation. And I would need to emphasize exactly what several of you have said, which is, I don't want my bias to affect the quality of the coaching you're getting. And I'm concerned about that. And I would like to make a referral to a coach that would bring something else to you. I'd have to think about that. Very good question. I'll give you one more just, let's see, there's one here for internal. Several of you are HR, you've mentioned. So here's a good HR one. You've been coaching Sam for 3 months in an organization where HR manages the coaching placements. Recently, you were approached by the HR head and asked to share information to inform Sam's performance review. And the standards that will address this, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 15. The first group of them are the relationship between the coach and client. So that's why 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 are there. And 15 thoughts. Thoughts on this. And then we're going to use about the last 5 or 6 minutes for what are you going to do with the information you now have around ethics? What's next for you? But we have time for a few minutes for this. What's your reaction?
Well, I can be, I think I'm pretty clear what I've done in the past, right or wrong, to what I've always done. In this situation, I would never be a person that would contribute to anybody's performance review at all. I would just, you know, instead of getting feedback from me, I identify from someone else where you can get valuable feedback. I just believe that as the coach in this moment, my goal is to help that individual when they get that feedback, how they can if they want to weave that through their coaching engagement, then it's a clean break for me. It's my first time seeing it, you know, it's all of those kind of things. This goes back again, Ann, to one of my belly burners is, and my gut just goes off. Because if you're coaching inside of an organization, you know, almost everything you do on a company device is recorded. It's backed up. It's all those kind of things. And, you know, to me, these two things go hand in hand. One is that I share right out of the gate, you know, when it comes to your performance review, it's like that review, I will not be part of that. I share with the supervisor as well as that client right out of the gate. And then secondly, we have, what I think I need to figure out now is how do I address the whole internal device usage for a company device, you know, because that's something I've never done and I've never thought about it until we were talking last week about that. You know, I could clear up my stuff, but if I'm within the same company, if I'm using a company device, then I'm under the same watchdog as my client or the supervisor or the whoever. It's just not as clean as I ever thought it was, to be honest.
Yeah. And that's expanding every day with technology. Who else was HR in our group? Laura, were you thoughts?
Yeah. So this is a hard no for me. And what I probably would do is reiterate the structured agreement. So, you know, typically you're providing as the coach some very general updates to the supervisor, or there's a stakeholder agreement typically in place. And so what I would probably do is reiterate that agreement to HR and say, these are the individuals that you can go to and talk to. But I wouldn't have any direct part in contributing. So I would go back to the agreement or how it was set up in the first place and refer to that. That's my initial thought.
Yeah. You can always say what I can share with you is we started on March 15th. We did 12 hours of coaching and we ended on November 12th. That's allowed. Yeah. Okay. I want to allow lots and lots of time. Thank you all for doing that. Those make them more interesting. That's kind of where the rubber meets the road. And well, yes, I'm ethical. Oh, how would I do this? And I will stick around if anybody wants to watch me try to find the learning portal. I think I can do it in less than 5 minutes. But this was a lot of content. We talked about it being a 300,000 square foot warehouse. We got to a little bit of it, guided by what you brought last Monday, were the most important issues, and you've done some thinking about it in the interim. What are you going to think about? What are you going to do related to ethics as a result of the time you've invested in this class? I want to hear from everybody. Jean, yes.
Yeah, right away, I am going to go and look at the agreements of the coach agreement templates that you have, and I'm going to, what's prompted me to upgrade my coach agreement is that I do not have a link to the ICF Code of Ethics. I'm going to add that link. And then I'm going to look at the templates to see if anything else needs upgrading. So thank you.
Thank you. And Jean, I hope you don't mind me inserting myself. I didn't remember I said there were three more things. So here they are. This also comes from Michael Marks. He said the three most common causes. Now, he told you how to stay out of trouble. Respect, always do what's best for the client and whatever. You can never communicate too much. These are the three that he said get people in trouble. These three. And I asked him that directly. So there's three things get people in trouble. Number one, no coaching agreement. Number two, a poorly explained coaching agreement. Number three, a bad coaching agreement. This is from Michael Marks, been on the Independent Review Board for longer than decades. This is what gets people in trouble. And you are in great shape because next week, your topic, establish and maintain agreements. Thank you, Jean. Thank you for letting me drop that in. We got four more minutes. We got four more people I'd love to hear from. Laura.
I want to think about my ethics statement before I do coaching with Lisa on Wednesday. And I would like to go out to the learning that you showed us on the ICF website and check that out. So I guess not super related to ethics, but those are my takeaways after today.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you, Laura. What'd you learn? What you gonna do with what you learned?
I just got an email from a client that I coached years ago, and I said, oh, I didn't have this when we coached back, so here's my agreement. So, oh, that's great, clear and everything. So just to remember how much clients appreciate it. And I'm going to have them play a role in tweaking my agreement. So I'm going to get some feedback. It's a built-in kind of focus group that I have with my clients. So get their feedback around whether it's clear, whether it was useful, what could I add?
Very good. Excellent. Yeah. Seeing it through their eyes. Dania, were you going to share?
Yes. It's to think about ethics. It's my takeaway. And to have present in every session this part of ethics. When we start a session or a new job in coaching, it's important to think about it.
Thank you. Thank you, very important. And Sterling.
I wrote down similar to what Jean had said. I want to look at those templates, because it's been a while since I've really done a lot of executive coaching. So I want to compare it to what I've used historically. And then secondly, that whole code of ethics thing is really important to me. And I want to focus on how do I set that up in, I call it my triangle of coaching, with the client's stakeholder and myself. What are the role that all three of us play in that? And I think by doing that, clarifying that up front, it probably reduces the chances of something happening later on. We've all agreed to it. So to build that out so that all three of us are on the same page would be critical.
Yeah, there's so many of us working in triangles, not one-on-one or even four. A prime, a sponsor, a client, and a coach, you know. Lots of folks to keep track of. Very good. I'll just leave you with one other thing since it's only 29 past the hour. There's an old document. I don't know if you all have seen it. It is a horizontal document, not a up and down. And it lists ACC, PCC, MCC columns. It's a comparison table. It's from 2005. It's old. They haven't redone it yet. If you go to that document and look at ethics, it will tell you two things that get you ejected. The actual language says, if you do this, a credential at any level will be denied. It's under ethics in that document. What they're referring to is consistently and repeatedly stepping outside the role of coach. Consistently, and that's not an exact quote, but consistently and repeatedly stepping outside. Let me just put on my therapist hat. Let me just put on my consultant hat. Let me just put on my this hat. Let me just put on my that hat. A credential at any level will be denied, is the language from that document. So stay in the role of coach. If you're out for a minute or two, okay, but if you consistently step out and repeatedly step out of the role of coach, you're in trouble. Y'all did great. And we ended at 5:30. I will stick around and find whatever else I can find. If you need to go, thank you so much for being here. Julie will be with you for Establish and Maintain Agreements next Monday. Great follow-on topic. And I will see you Wednesday. Thank you to our volunteers, Laura and Lisa, on Wednesday. Thank you. And if you'd like to look through the ICF website, stick around. All right. Thank you.